And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
Hey, listener, thanks for listening to Unguarded Shooting, on Almighty Ballin, the Almighty Podcast, part of ABPN, the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Check us out, almightyballer.com. Listen to the shows, listen to all of the shows. Don't do anything except for listen to the shows. Just quit your job, you know, say goodbye to all of your friends and just listen to shows.
Leave your family.
Today on Unguarded Shooting, Lux and I, Michael Luxenberg, my co-host, at ML Surfboard on Twitter, we're going to be breaking down games. Let's see, it is December 22nd,
Thursday. The games are from the 21st, which is Wednesday.
It is. They are from the 21st. Our recording setup, whatever, just don't worry about it. Just know that we had some technical difficulties, so we're recording...
You'll notice the audio doesn't sound as good as it normally does. That's because we don't have the same equipment we usually do. That's life. We're dealing with it, and we're still overcoming obstacles.
So that we can bring this podcast. Yeah.
To give you the content you crave.
That's how much I love you.
Yeah, we're here for you in such a real way.
All right. So, Pistons-Grizzlies. So going into this game, by the way, the Grizzlies won this game in rather convincing fashion. The game was kind of... It was like the Grizzlies were sort of pulling away with it, and then they stopped pulling away with it for a little bit when the Pistons started to come back. But then in the third quarter, they went on a double-digit run, and it was pretty much over at that point. The reason why this game was particularly notable and the reason why we decided that we should watch it is because actually the... number one team in defensive rating this year is the Memphis Grizzlies, and the number two team is the Detroit Pistons. So, this was a, you know, defensive-minded matchup. It ended up being 98-86, which I guess is a low-scoring game now.
I mean, it would have been a lot lower scoring if Marc Gasol weren't a beast. Actually, before we even get into this game, I want to give you a stat. I want to give you a taste of this game. I'm just going to read each player on the Grizzlies and their field goal numbers to you. Are you ready for this?
I'm so ready.
JaMychal Green, 3 of 10. Chandler Parsons, 1 of 5. Mike Conley, 3 of 10.
Chandler Parsons' first game, back from injury.
Yeah, not great. Mike Conley, 3 of 10. Tony Allen, 3 of 8. Jarrell Martin, 1 of 1. Zach Randolph, 3 of 13. James Ennis, 2 of 4. Trent Williams. Is it Trent Williams or Troy Williams? I forget his name.
I don't know.
T. Williams. Troy Williams. I was right the first time. Troy Williams, 0-0.
Wait, no.
This is very important to get to the end. Whichever Harrison, 1 of 1. Troy Daniels, 2 of 9. Vince Carter, 2 of 4. Marc Gasol, 14 of 17.
Yeah.
And that's the story of this game, is that JaMychal Green had 10 points, the only other player in double figures to go with Marc Gasol's 38. And he was just dominant on both ends for all 37 minutes he played, and that was decidedly the difference in this game.
Yeah, well, and, you know, these are both teams that went into this game on significant losing streaks. Since Reggie Jackson has returned, the Pistons are 3-7. They had lost, I think, 3 or 4 straight. And then
I think this is the fourth in a row.
The Grizzlies had lost 3 or 4 straight. So both teams were losing a lot. And you know, the Pistons were in, you know, panic mode. The Pistons, I guess, are continuing to be in panic mode now. And a lot of the reason why they're scared and upset, I think, was put on display in this game. You know, I brought this up because, I mean, Marc Gasol, the way that Andre Drummond is supposed to be Dwight Howard, right, in this system, you shouldn't let Marc Gasol do that.
No, absolutely not. I mean, it shows the difference, right, between Andre Drummond and, like, the truly elite NBA centers. Because just a couple nights ago, Gobert destroyed Marc Gasol.
Yeah.
Like, reduced him to nothingness.
Yeah.
Simply ashes in the wind. And then tonight, we see Gasol go off against Drummond. And it shows this difference in just defensive ability and rim protection ability and on-court awareness between Drummond, who's very, very good, obviously, and Gobert, who's legit excellent, and sort of it illustrates the gap between, you know, the very good centers and the great centers in the league right now.
Yeah, right. And it's hard to quantify what exactly it is that Andre Drummond contributes. I mean, except for rebounds, right? But, like, rebounds are rebounds. I mean, it would be okay, you know, it's fine. But, you know, he's not particularly efficient, even though he shoots a lot of, you know, shots right near the basket. He misses all of his free throws. His rim protection stats are, you know, iffy at best. So I think that there's a lot of anxiety among Pistons fans. And I think at this point, there might be a lot of anxiety within the organization that Andre Drummond is just not a centerpiece.
I mean, the question is, it used to be like, can Andre Drummond be Dwight Howard? It's becoming, can Andre Drummond be DeAndre Jordan? And
that's both good.
Yeah, but DeAndre Jordan is definitely a notable step down from Dwight Howard at the peak of his powers.
Right, yeah.
And he's not even at the DeAndre Jordan level right now. And the question if he gets there, like, seems to be increasingly questionable, I guess.
Yeah,
like every game that looks like this, because like he got bossed on by Marc Gasol at both ends. Like there was a play towards the end of the game where Drummond went for a dunk and Gasol just like threw the ball and Drummond to the ground, like just like housed him like a dad playing with his 6-year-old child, and then he dropped 38 points on him on the other side. Like this was a game where it seems kind of clear that the front court matchups are going to determine a lot of what goes down this game, because that's sort of how the Grizzlies' offense runs. And the Pistons, while Reggie Jackson and Caldwell Pope and Tobias Harris are all good players, the Grizzlies' defense is exceptional on the perimeter, and those guys aren't the kind of guys who are going to be able to consistently generate offense against that kind of defense.
Yeah.
They're just not there yet. They're young. Like, they could get there.
Are you talking about the front court or back court?
The back court of the Pistons.
Yeah, well,
like, the top-notch pressure defense is going to, like, did tonight mess with them in huge ways.
Well, see, I think that, you know, the production that the Memphis Grizzlies get from the point guard position when, you know, Mike Conley isn't in the game is really bad. So it's pretty much a question of, like, okay, is Mike Conley going to be on the court for a substantial amount of minutes? And the answer to that was, for tonight, no. 24 minutes, I guess, is nice, you know.
It's exactly half a basketball game.
Yeah, but, you know, I really think that it's a combination of, well, I was telling you, my All-NBA first team has Tony Allen on it and Marc Gasol.
All defense.
Right. Yeah, I think that it's, you know, those two guys.
I mean, it's those two guys, but it's also Ennis, and, like, even Harrison gets after it on defense. Like, they just play hard on defense.
And Conley, when he's healthy and fantastic. He's in the game, he's great.
And, yeah, and that makes a huge difference. Like I was saying, like, Jackson, Caldwell Pope, Harris, etc. are all good. But they're not the kind of guys who, on their own, can overcome that kind of defense. It was going to be about, like, can Drummond make some things happen for them to open up space for them to do work on the outside? And the answer was, like, no, absolutely fucking... absolutely freaking not. Like, there was no... He just had nothing going... I mean, 3 of 8. like, says everything you need to know about this game. Yeah, but ability to get things going in the pick and roll.
Yeah, but he was 7 of 10 from the free throw line, you know, whatever. And he got 19 rebounds. But it's like, what did you, like, what is that 19 rebounds, you know? It's really hard to figure out, like, you know, it's like, okay, you got all those rebounds, but, like, you know, would somebody else have gotten those rebounds, you know? Like, does the fact that everyone on offense is already streaking down the court, like, you know, are you in a unique position where anyone would get 20 rebounds in Stan Van Gundy's system? It's just, you know, I think you made a good point with the whole Dwight Howard thing, because it's harder for me to tell that Andre Drummond is a positive when he's out on the court. He was a -8 for tonight, so in a literal sense, he wasn't. The only, let's see, so, despite being 1 for 11, Marcus Morris was a +4. And then really the only starter that had a good performance tonight is the, much maligned within the locker room, as of late, Reggie Jackson, who is, you know, returning from a knee injury and like still not 100%. I mean, last year Jackson was, you know, this close. Really close, to all-star status, averaged 19 points, 6 assists, helped get the Pistons to an 8 seed and really made the difference by giving them an elite pick and roll option to pair with Drummond. But, he's shooting 38.7% thus far this year, which is the 5th worst percentage among guys who are playing 25 minutes or more a game. And the Pistons, when he's on the court, he is a negative 11 per 100 possessions, which is 9th worst among all guards. So, yeah, it's not great. So, you know, the team is a little bit better with Ishmith. I feel like, you know, I actually had someone on Twitter who I was interacting with, a Pistons fan, who said that they were looking forward to hearing, you know, why I'm not super concerned about this Pistons team. And I'm not. Well, so where are you before I explain why?
I don't think I'm mega concerned. I think that they have sort of the athleticism and the talent to match up with a good number of Eastern Conference teams, probably enough to get them into the playoffs. I'd imagine. When everything shakes out. But, I mean, that said, I think that myself, and I think you and others, I think, had higher expectations for this team than, like, they'll beat a bunch of bad teams and get swept in the first round, which is becoming increasingly looking like the outcome that they're going to run into.
Sure, but I mean, like, they had Reggie Jackson out for the first part of the season. I mean, we all talked about at the, we all talked about this. We talked about like, oh, well, crap, Reggie Jackson's out. They're going to start off slow. You know, it's, they're in a weird place right now as far as the timing of that. But I mean, we're like, what, you know, 30 games, 25 games or something like that into the season. They've played, yeah, 14, in 17, so they played 31 games.
I mean, there's plenty of time for them to make a push in, like, a very dense and mostly mediocre Eastern Conference.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they need to figure out their rotations and stuff.
Ladies and gentlemen, today's opponents on Man versus Train. At the crossing, we have Rick, a 175-pound frustrated man who's running late for work. And on the tracks, we have Bull, a million-pound freight train that takes a mile to stop. Let's see who comes out on top.
You can't beat a train, so don't try. Stop. Trains can't. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
It's really hard to do that when, you know, you don't... That's the crucial thing, right? Is that, you know, the two guys who are running your offense is your bench offense and then your starting offense. Reggie Jackson was out with an injury. So you don't have offensive continuity to make everything work because Reggie Jackson's not there orchestrating it. And then Ishmith replaces him, which means Ishmith isn't, you know, gaining chemistry with the bench and then you run into the same issue. So I just want, you know, I think we should tap the brakes with the Pistons. They're clearly better than their performance thus far. And really, you know, I think that this roster construction makes a lot of sense. And I think that it will start to reveal itself as time goes on. You know, one thing I will say that I'm really concerned about is, you know, I guess that Stanley Johnson's bad.
I'm worried you might be right. I was a big Stanley Johnson advocate in the offseason. And it's looking pretty rough for my dude.
Yeah. Well, I was never the biggest fan. I was really surprised that they didn't go with Justice Winslow. He seemed like the move, you know.
I don't know. I think that there's a good argument that Stanley Johnson might have been, given the info at hand, the better prospect. But, boy, not retroactively speaking, certainly not the case.
Yeah. He is struggling to... I mean, he's in the D League now, so that's bad.
Stanley Johnson?
Yeah.
He played 17 minutes tonight.
Well, he must have been called up.
Yeah.
Are you...
He played 17 minutes?
Yeah, he played 17 minutes. But he's playing regularly.
Got two rebounds and basically did nothing else.
Wow, yeah. No, okay, so 0 for 3, no three-pointers, no free throws, two rebounds, a block, two turnovers. Not good.
Not good at all. He played some good defense for a stretch in the second quarter. That was nice.
Yeah. But even then, I don't know whether that's actually good defense. He plays active defense.
No, he played good defense during the stretch when they were playing close in the second quarter.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what people said when he was covering LeBron during that first round series. But, like, LeBron was smoking him. Like, he looked like he was doing a good job, but, like, he was getting smoked. So.
Right, but the side difference is that they weren't getting smoked because it was during, like, that stretch when he was playing a defense that they made their 16-2 run and got the game close again. And yeah. Then he and Reggie went to the bench, then it got spread back out to 9, and then everything, you know, went pear-shaped. But
so
he did some good defensive work, but, like, that's the thing is, like, anyone with Stanley Johnson's body, right, can do good defensive work. He's long. He's crazy strong. He can move horizontal. He can move side to side.
He's got to get the first shot on.
Yeah, exactly. He can do a lot of stuff on the defensive end, but so can a lot of players in the NBA, right? And the whole thing with Stanley Johnson, why I was saying in the offseason that, like, yeah, he has the body and the physicality to be a really good defender. And that, so same traits can also make him an effective offensive piece, especially if he starts to get a shot going, which he was kind of always towards the end of last year. That has not panned out.
Yeah.
Even kinda. And it's very disappointing. All right, I have a question for you. I want to turn this one around. How far can this Grizzlies team go, working the way that it works?
Yeah. No.
Or saying no to the question? No, thank you. I'm not going to answer your question.
Okay. So, you know, defense wins championships?
To an extent, sure.
Well, no, it doesn't. you have to score. You have to score more points than the other team. I mean, consistently, you know, the teams that have been hyper late are the teams that... I mean, the Warriors had the best defense in the league because, like, they were nailing all of their three-pointers and they could get back on defense and, like, you know, there's rhythm and everything. Like, 99 times out of 100, the better offensive team wins. And that's why the team with the superstar wins against the team that doesn't have one, you know?
Right. I mean, I think the defense wins championships adage could be edited a little bit to be teams that can play good defense but also can score a lot of points win championships.
Right, yeah. No, I mean, it's like... Offense wins championships as long as you have a defense that can affect the other team's offense. It doesn't really need to be all that profound. You know, it doesn't. As lovely as the Jazz are, you know, I think they're maybe going on
the Grizzlies. You mean
Well, the Jazz, I was talking about the Jazz, but the Grizzlies apply to this too. Like, as nice as this idea that, like, we'll lock you down, as great as that is, you know, you're not an unstoppable force hitting an immovable object. Like, you know, if you run into the Rockets or the Warriors, you're going to get buzzsawed.
I mean, we saw that last night with the Warriors Jazz game. Like,
yeah, like
they beat them by like 30 points.
Right, right. So, I mean, the Grizzlies are nice, and they're going to beat the teams that they should beat. They're going to beat teams that, you know, can't just smoke them. But there are teams that can smoke them. You know, they are what they are, and they're a lot of fun, and I like a lot of aspects about the Grizzlies. You know, but.
Marcus Gasol is like one of the most fun players to watch in the whole universe.
I love Marcus Gasol. You know, the Grizzlies are really fun. And like, it's not like I'm like, oh, you can't win a championship, like your team sucks. That's not really how I think about the game. I want to watch good basketball. So, you know, the Grizzlies are playing good basketball, but like not like championship basketball.
Sure.
But wake me up when Chandler Parsons is back. And well, so ask me this again if Chandler Parsons shows real signs of life, because, you know, then you maybe have something.
Okay. That makes sense to me. Should we move on to Minnesota and Atlanta? Or do you have anything more to say about this little hoops game?
No. The Pistons make cards work.
Grizzlies steal picnic baskets.
Yeah. I'm not sure Yogi's a grizzly, but he's a bear. So Hawks versus Wolves. So when the Minnesota Timberwolves, did you watch that game? Did you watch that game in Chicago?
Yes.
Okay. So, I think that game was really important. I think that like, you know, that, I think it's a distinct possibility that the Thibodeau message wasn't like clicking with them, right? That I think Thibodeau's like not a lovable guy, right? And that like
seems pretty true.
Maybe it takes a while to like get used to him, especially with like a young team, right? But like I think they all sort of rallied around like, we're gonna beat these Bulls team, we're gonna like do it for Pony Tibbs, you know what I mean? So
stay gold, Pony Tibbs.
Yeah, stay defensive oriented. I don't know. So, yeah, I think that was really important. And I think we're starting to see a different team in late games. And I've made this point on podcasts before, and this isn't true anymore, but I'm sure it's to a certain extent true. For 20 games, the Minnesota Timberwolves, for the first 24 minutes of the games, were the second best team in the league behind the Warriors. So, you know, and then something weird happened at halftime, and, you know, people were like, oh, they're just young. That's like, you know, that's wrong. Like, it's not just that. It's really complicated. I'm still struggling to figure it out, but.
I mean, I have some thoughts on that question, actually. Especially after watching the successes in tonight and in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Which is that I think in a lot of those games where they were falling apart in the third quarter, teams were making adjustments, and they were succeeding initially, and then the Wolves started to sort of, like, stop trusting in the system and freelancing more and trying to, like, make things happen outside of, like, the offensive system or the defensive system and just, like, rely on talent to overwhelm teams rather than playing their game. Because teams are making adjustments to take advantage of gaps and stuff like that, and rather than being like, the system's going to work, like, even if their first four or five plays that they run out of time, out of, you know, the half can exploit our system, like, it's still going to work if we just, like, stick to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And both these last two games, that's been what's happened. Right? Like, the other teams have made runs. In Chicago, they were down by a bunch. And tonight, Atlanta kept coming back at them throughout the entire game. And they never, like, lost their heads, and they made the same kind of dumb mistakes they make occasionally, because they are a young team, they're going to make dumb mistakes sometimes, but that in a lot of their past games, you could draw a pretty linear graph with a positive slope of the number of dumb mistakes as the game progressed that they were making. And that was not the case tonight.
Or well, showroom. So I think what it is that, and you know, it seems like I'm calling out the Minnesota Timberwolves, but you know, I'm not, you know, it's not specific to them. I think what it is honestly is cardio. I think that, you know, I bet if I talked to Thibodeau and he was, you know, under truth serum or whatever, the reason why he pushes his players so hard and plays his starters so many minutes is because, you know, the reason they make like dumb mistakes and all of these errors and look like a totally different team as the game progresses is because they're getting tired. That's when you make dumb mistakes. Like that's when, you know, you, don't close out. That's when you blow rotations. And I think that coming out of college, there's a difference between professional conditioning and NCAA conditioning.
That's for sure.
Yeah. You know, I think Wiggins was out of shape. Karl-Anthony Towns didn't have this profound drop off. Gorgui Dango, like he was out of shape. And I mean, out of shape in terms of like NBA stars, like people who make millions of dollars be in shape, you know? So yeah, I think that now, and I sort of saw this for the first time in the Chicago Bulls team, in the Chicago Bulls game, they were, you know, coming back and then, you know, there was a quick 5-0, you know, run and it looked like it was about to happen. You know, there was this collapse that was like imminent there and that they were going to, give up the fight. But like something just sort of like flicked on and, you know, they just found all this energy somewhere inside of them. And like, you know, it's like how people describe this runner's wall, right? Where, you know, you break through this wall and you're just like an automaton. Like, I think that they have started to get to that point. So
see, I buy that to an extent.
Yeah, it's a combination of things.
But yeah, I do think that there's also this mental component that we saw in Chicago. Like, the reason why I think the Chicago game was so meaningful on a certain level, right, is that they were losing by a pretty substantial margin at the halftime.
Like 20 plus, I think.
Yeah. And they, instead of being like, abandoning what they did, what they're supposed to do every game, they just kept doing it.
Yeah.
And didn't stop, and it was like, oh, wait, the system this guy's been using in the NBA to consistently vast degrees of success, maybe it's a good idea to keep doing that. And I don't think you're wrong. I think that there definitely is a degree to which, like sort of getting their bodies accustomed to playing this style is coming along slowly and getting them conditioned in the right way. And I think there's a part of it that's just building this idea of like trust in the way the system works. And I think what we're seeing, and hopefully it'll continue this way the rest of the season, is the development of both those factors coming together into like the best version of this team is when they don't get tired and they don't start trying to deviate from the plan. Like, they stick to the plan, they stay high energy, they're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah.
And I think we're starting to see them realize that and them also come to, like, gain the capacity to do that.
Yeah.
So,
the Timberwolves out-rebounded Atlanta 52-35. Of course, Dwight Howard was out.
Right. That's got something to do with that.
Yeah. Dwight Howard's the worst. he's good at basketball, though. listen to this quote, okay? You know, a reporter asked him how he felt about the high number of turnovers in the first half, and Tibbs responded, quote, "Everything stresses me."
Yeah. I saw that quote, too.
Oh, man.
Obviously very true.
That's gold. We've talked a lot about the Minnesota Timberwolves. Not quite as much about the Atlanta Hawks. Muscala. You know, he's kind of good. He's pretty good. I mean, like, you know, he's not like, we saw this article that was like, is he the free agency sleeper of the, you know, free agency or whatever? You know, I would accept that argument if you were to make it, if you were like, well, he can shoot threes and he's a 7-footer and he plays pretty decent defense. But, like, he probably is not the next Kristaps Porzingis, you know? Like,
no, but what he...
It's going to be okay.
What he definitely is, though, and this was super clear tonight, is he is the sort of player who, when deployed correctly, can swing games. The sort of guy who, if you put him in against certain bench units, they have no way to really defend him without throwing off their whole defensive system.
Yeah.
Or the kind of guy who, like, just generates mismatches in other parts of the court. Like, he, when deployed correctly, he can be massively disruptive in a way that can really be conducive to his team winning basketball games. And, I mean, tonight you put 16 points up on the Wolves, and he did it by making cuts, by running, by moving around the floor, by drawing defenders out. And when he was doing that, those were the moments when Atlanta was closest, like, closest, not just because he was hitting his shots, but because he was drawing Karl-Anthony Towns away from the rim, or drawing Gorgui Dang away from the rim and creating space in the interior for other, for Schrader and for Schroeder. And for Bazemore and Scott to make things happen. Millsap too. And when they have that, the Hawks become a lot more dangerous. It makes a huge difference in a world where they don't have Dwight Howard lying around.
Lying around. So, you know, it's interesting. Mike Muscala, where is it? Mike Muscala, is that right? Muscala is actually the he's got like his rim protection stats are like 46%. I'm trying to figure out where I'm trying to find this this rim protection stats. It's kind of hard. Defensive rating, net rating.
I mean, some stats are hard. But anyway, we're looking for that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, he statistically is one of the best rim protectors in the league, which, you know, is not a super true thing, but it's probably not entirely untrue either. He's good.
It seems to indicate he's a pretty good rim defender who mostly defends the rim against bench players.
I wouldn't be totally stunned if someone picked him up and, like, he was sort of a snag. I mean, he's not... I would be sort of stunned if he was, like, really, really good, but... You know Brad Miller?
Of course I remember Brad Miller.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's sort of the... I mean, you could imagine a universe where a team gets Muscala, like a team like the Rockets or something, picks up Muscala, and he ends up winning Most Improved. I don't think it's going to happen, but you can imagine that, and that's, you know, that's a valuable player.
Yeah.
And he's certainly sort of proving himself to be that. And tonight, he was sort of critical in keeping a game close that sort of had no business being close, because the Wolves really were all over the Hawks in a lot of ways, and seemed just to be playing the vastly better game for long stretches. And Muscala and Millsap, basically, and Muscala more than Millsap, to be honest, really was or were what kept the Hawks close.
So, Dirk Nowitzki and Joel Embiid are tied in rim protection stats.
So those stats are flawed.
Well, I mean, Dirk is it's a small sample size.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from Geico.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the Geico app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the Geico app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
I really want to find this.
So a couple other interesting things.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, I'll vamp for a little bit.
Go on without me.
So, tonight was really interesting for the Wolves for a couple of reasons. First is they've been in a bit... They've been shooting less than 30% from three for a minute. They didn't improve on that much. They shot 31% tonight. But towards the end of the game, they actually made some big three-pointers. And that if that can continue, that's going to be a huge difference for them going forward. We also finally saw sort of the ideal kind of, like, Towns, Wiggins, and LaVine all play pretty well at the same time stretches that are sort of what everyone's been fantasizing about for a year now, for, like, through the whole offseason until now. And so it was good to see that. It was good to see Wiggins... this is what I'll talk about. Wiggins did an art.
Oh, yeah, that was super cool. There
was one of the coolest finishes I've ever seen. Wiggins went to the rim, went up for sort of a short jumper kind of thing, got fouled, had the ball fly up in the air, and didn't give up on the play, and was able to sort of corral it and do like a one-handed tip-in situation on his own shot that flew out of his hands before he landed. And it was one of the most insane, like, athletic and...
It was like...
And tenacious, heads-up, like, baskets I've ever seen. And it's moments like that that display that sort of, like, so next-level body control and focus that he can have in these moments that makes me think that, like, he's going to be great.
Well, you know, there's a... you know, that is... The ability to do that is, like, the calling card of guys like, you know, Michael Jordan, right? He has so many, you know, clips of him just, like, seemingly floating. And that's what people said about Dr. J. I mean, like, it you're right. Like, it awakens you to the potential of this guy because, like, you need to be a certain type of athlete, you know, to take contact from a 7-foot, 260-pound man and just hang there and just, like, tip it in. Like,
yeah, and to catch your own miss and tip it in like, this kind of fluid motion. I mean, honestly, anytime someone does something I've never seen before on a basketball court, it's, like, a pretty profound experience.
I mean, I've seen that.
When? I've never seen that.
Tracy McGrady, I think.
I don't think I've ever seen anyone do that.
Tracy McGrady, by the way, is eligible for the next Hall of Fame.
So. He better get in.
Well, he will. He will.
Because he's amazing.
Tracy McGrady is the swag man.
Yeah, I miss Tracy McGrady.
So, Minnesota bench is a trash can?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they played an 8-man rotation tonight. I mean, that's kind of a Thibodeau thing, but it's also kind of like a...
The bench combined for 6-for-21.
Yeah. It's kind of a Thibodeau thing. It's kind of a 6-for-21 thing. It's kind of a really finna play Cole Aldrich situation.
Cole Aldrich was good. Well, not good. He was a good bench center for a couple of years. He was good bench center when he was on the Knicks, and then he went to the Kings, and he was pretty good backing up Cousins, and then he went to the... When he was on the Knicks, Kings, Clippers, and then Minnesota. And, like, he was, like, you know, competent and or really good in his minutes out on the court. For whatever reason, he's just not, no.
I will see you're good, and I'll agree that he was borderline adequate.
Yeah.
Adequate. In a couple of places. But, like, I mean, I just don't, like... I just would you don't want to use the, you know, you don't want to throw those minutes in the garbage can. And right now, playing that dude is 30 minutes in a garbage can.
Right, yeah, no. And so, I mean, like you were saying, it's a combination of Thibodeau being like, I'm not going to play a bunch of scrubs. Again, well, not again. These are NBA players. They're really good at basketball. They would kick my butt on the court and off the court. They would probably beat me up. So, but like, you know,
that I could be Cole Aldrich Wiggins in a crossword puzzle, then.
That's rude. But like Wiggins is better than like Shabazz or something, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's just a reality.
I mean, I'm a little surprised that we didn't see any Tyus Jones.
Isn't that a song by Frank Ocean?
I'm surprised we didn't see a little Tyus Jones.
No, it's a, I got a Tyus Jones. Took me high.
Dang, dude. but yeah, I mean, Tyus Jones strikes me as, like, kind of a Thibodeau kind of guy.
Yeah.
And so it is a little weird to me that we didn't see any of him.
Yeah.
I'm curious about that because, like, I mean, do you agree with that, right? Like, Tyus Jones, like, can kind of shoot, plays real hard, likes to run around. Like, that just seems like...
Well, Chris Dunn was... seemed like, you know... I see the value of Chris Dunn out there. For whatever reason, there's a lot of stuff that he's doing tremendously bad. But if anything, I think that the things that he's doing really well look like they're sustainable. So, like, he's getting tons of steals and he's playing great defense. But, and then the things that he's doing really trash.
Like shooting the basketball.
Yeah. It's not that they're not sustainable because, like, anyone can continue to be terrible shooting. But, like, I feel like there's a significant likelihood. I think Chris Dunn is probably going to be okay. And Ricky Rubio was hitting his threes tonight, so...
Yeah, well, in a universe where Ricky Rubio hits his threes with some regularity, this team becomes exceedingly dangerous. But I'm reticent to even consider that possibility until, like, he does it more than once in a row. Yeah, that's sort of his top-level limit of games where he'll hit threes is one in a row.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then back to the Hawks. The Hawks, like, they miss Dwight, man.
Yeah, whatever.
They do. Like, that's the thing. It's like, and I have said rude things about Dwight Howard.
He's good at basketball. I just, like, don't like him.
Yeah, nor do I. But and I've complained about Dwight Howard in many ways on this podcast and others before, but they miss Dwight Howard, man. Like, they don't have good rebounders on this team, really. They don't have that kind of, like, athletic interior work. They don't have the kind of strength to, like... I mean, Carl, like... I'm surprised that Towns only had 17 points tonight.
That Towns had?
Yeah, only 17. Like, he was...
He had, like, 18 rebounds, though.
Yeah, oh, my God. He crushed him on a rebound on the boards. Yeah,
I think he had, like, 19.
Something. He had 17 and 18, I think.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Very good. But I was just sort of surprised that he didn't have even... I mean, and 5 assists. Nice.
Wait. Wait. Okay, yeah, here. You got the Tyus Jones.
At what point did you stop looking at rim protection stats and start queuing up the song?
This whole time, Tyus Jones. All right.
But yeah, they miss Dwight. They, like, don't have interior presence. They got banged around by Towns, who probably should have put up more than 17. To be honest, there was a moment in the game when one of the commentators was like, "You don't want him shooting threes," which is foolish because you do want him shooting threes sometimes. But this game was a good example of a time where, like, maybe settle down with the outside jumper, Carl. You can physically destroy every single person who could guard you right now.
Yeah. I mean, Paul Millsap is, like, a great defender.
Yeah, but, well, he is a brick house.
He's a
brick!
I'm not going to play that song. We already played a song, so...
podcast.
We should move on.
Yeah, let's do it. Mavs Blazers. Kind of the game of the night in a certain type of way. Because it was that kind of night.
So, this is the Blazers' low point, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if this were a movie, this is the end of Act 2, to be sure. This is their Empire Strikes Back. It was rough, man. There's a lot of this game that was really rough to watch.
That was a really good movie.
Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah, but you mean, like, in terms of their character arcs?
Yeah, in terms of the Star Wars plot.
Like, yeah, like, everyone dies and stuff.
Yeah, like, Han Solo is stuck in carbonite, Luke gets his hand cut off.
Yeah.
The rebellion is basically ruined.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is their
There's empire. No Ewoks.
Yeah, the Ewoks haven't been discovered yet. Yeah. The secret weapon that can destroy a universally or collectively powerful army is teddy bears. Who knew?
Yeah.
But anyways, this was brutal noodles. To be entirely honest, like
the Mavs' offense. Okay, so well, first let's you know,
should we talk about each half independently? Because this was really a game of two halves.
A tale of two
halves.
A tale of two shitties.
Sure, yes. I mean, you get mad at me for swearing the podcast, but it's a good joke.
Yeah, but okay, so, go ahead.
So, yeah, so we should go half by half. So, the first half, the Mavs legitimately dominated the
Blazers. Oh, yes, yeah.
In a way that was surreal. I think is the only way to describe it.
Well, I mean, they lost to the Kings last night.
They lost to the Kings last night. Well, Boogie put up 55.
Yeah.
There was no such performance on the other side. And that game was... Or no, this game was closer. But that game was way closer than the first half of this game was.
See, I tweeted this. Live footage from the Trailblazers locker room after the Mavs dropped 60, 20-point lead at halftime. See, it's a little...
That's bad radio. What just happened is bad radio.
There's a dog.
It's the This Is Fine.
Yeah.
The This Is Fine cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, so the first half, right, the Mavs just straight dominated them. Like, Barnes was putting up numbers. Matthews was hitting shots. Finney Smith was putting pressure on him. Williams was hitting shots. Like, they couldn't miss. Dwight Powell was OD. With the hustle plays. Like, they were up 61-39 and a half. Like, they were just... Seth Curry was hitting shots. They were just clowning on the Blazers, who, like, couldn't make a shot, couldn't get a stop, couldn't do anything, to be honest. Like, everything about the Blazers that is a weakness was on display in the first half. Their interior defense was weak. Their wing defenders, both of whom are very... Or their power forward, small forward positions, both of whom are very good, are also a little bit slow. And they were getting outrun to their spots. CJ and Dame were cold. Couldn't hit shots. And it was like every single thing... When you say, like, Blazers are alright, but they have these weaknesses, those were all on display in, like, really egregious ways in the first half.
Yeah.
The Mavericks, it's like... Yeah, Harrison Barnes isn't as pretty good. And they hit some threes, and that was cool.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we had Deron Williams back, so we, like, actually had a point guard. But J.J. Barea got injured, so we'll see what happens there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we actually had a starting caliber, I mean, on the low end, probably. Maybe, you know, close to average starting
point guard. Maybe even a mid-tier point guard.
Yeah, so, and I mean, that's really important, right? And Wesley Matthews has... been playing really well, and he's sort of back to his pre-injury self, and, you know, Harrison Barnes is sort of breaking out a little bit. I mean, the Mavs are in a better place right now than they were, like, a month ago.
Oh, absolutely.
They still don't have Dirk.
But then the second half happened. And in the second half, Dame and CJ started hitting shots, and Harkless and Aminu were getting their spots on defense, and... Plumlee was largely unintrusive.
Plumlee's bad.
Yeah, we talk about this every time we talk about the Blazers.
Yeah, but like we disagree on so many things. I want to bond over it.
Yeah, Margo Plumlee, or whatever his name is, he's bad.
Yeah.
Mitchley Plumlee, I don't care about his name. But yeah, he's a garbage can. But then, like, we saw Shabazz Napier hitting shots. Crab hit a bunch of shots in the second half. And all of a sudden, that 22-point whatever deficit at halftime was won with about 20 seconds left. But the Blazers just, like, couldn't make it happen. Largely due to Wesley Matthews.
Yeah, Wesley Matthews is good. He's really good at defense.
Yeah, he played incredible defense on Dame in the last two possessions.
Yeah, and that was, like, something that the world collectively missed for good reason in that first-round series last year, Mavs versus Thunder, you know, is that Wesley Matthews was, like, really good against Kevin Durant. Wesley Matthews continues to be a really, really, really good defender. And, like,
If you were, like, you know, what if he was on the Clippers? It'd be good.
Yeah, he would fit well. I mean, he's the kind of guy who can fit well on most any team.
Yeah, yeah.
He shoots, he plays good defense, and he hustles. Like, that's, he's a pretty prototypical 3 and D dude. He's a pretty prototypical 2016, soon to be 17.
Yeah. I like him a lot, but I feel like he's just like, player. He needs to be an asset given where the Mavs are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, given the Mavs roster, like, how many of these players do you really think are going to be playing on the next Mavs team that makes the playoffs?
Harrison Barnes, Seth Curry, maybe Justin Anderson.
So three tops. Like, that's... Well,
no, there's that one guy who I can't remember.
Dwight Howe?
No, I just don't think Dwight's that good.
I love his hustle. Finney Smith?
Yeah.
Yeah, Finney Smith could be there. But, like, that's my point, is that most everyone on this team should be trade assets, because they're not going anywhere. Their best bet to get the back of the playoffs soon, to be honest, is to get the first pick and get Markelle Fultz and start building. Around that guy, who is yowza good. Still think Lonzo Ball will be better, but I know no NBA team is going to trust my opinion. I swear to God.
Dude, okay, so I don't think that this draft class is going to be as good as people think it is. But I think Markelle Fultz is going to be better than people think.
I've watched a little bit of Fultz, watched a little bit of Lonzo Ball, and against better teams, Ball does more impressive things. I understand that it's also... I mean, this is a big tangent. It's hard to gauge where Fultz is at because he is so clearly the focal point of that team in a way that makes it hard to tell like what his complete game looks like. Because against bad teams, he wants to pass to get his teammates involved. Against good teams, he kind of has to dominate the ball. It's really hard to tell exactly where he's at. Lonzo Ball, it does not fluctuate. Like, he is hitting crazy threes and making crazy passes every game, no matter who they're playing against. But he has a much more talented roster. Regardless of who you think is better, it may just be that my inclination towards enjoying players who seem like they're doing something that's not, like, who are doing things that are abnormal, may be biasing me, but I think that those two are both going to be phenomenal. Yeah. NBA players. But that aside, I think that the Mavs really need to be thinking about the future in that way. Because even though they were able to get a win tonight, they're a tire fire. And just because a Portland team that might kind of suck...
Well, they are... Okay, so if their defensive rating stays on course, they will be the worst defense since the 2009 Sacramento Kings that won 17 games.
So definitely within,
that is bad.
Definitely within the range of potentially they suck.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about this during the game, right? And we were going back and forth on this, both of us, about whether or not they're bad, because their offense is good. And as a capacity to score a lot of points, the thing is, the number of points they have to score normally... To overcome their terrible defense, it's a huge number of points, especially if a team that relies on two scorers to do most of the work.
Well, yeah. There's one thing that I'm going to wake up to tomorrow that should make Blazers fans upset. We're going to wake up tomorrow and the Denver Nuggets, the Sacramento Kings, and the Blazers are going to be tied for the 8th seed in the West. Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Oh, my God. It is the three weediest towns in the NBA. Yeah.
And then if I wake up tomorrow and Nerlens Noel is not a Blazer, I'm...
Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
I give up.
But that's the move, right? Like, I don't know what it's, the...
Yeah.
I don't know what the Blazers give up, but that's...
Alan Crabb.
I'm so reticent for them to give up Alan Crabb. Like, if I were them, I'd be...
That is ridiculous. Alan Crabb is a second-round pick. He's coming off the bench. He's not that great. Nerlens Noel is amazing.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, I mean, if you can get Noel...
It would be a total steal.
If you can get Noel for Crabb, you gotta do it.
Yeah.
Like, and he's just exactly what that team needs. Like, they need... So, the weaknesses, right? The 1-4... Dame and CJ are great at offense. They're kind of a little small and not super great at defense.
Damian's like the worst defensive point guard in the league.
Yeah. And Aminu and Harkless have really good size for their position, play good defense, but both a little bit slow. Noel covers up for all of that. Because Noel can switch. He's super mobile. So he's able to shift himself around and make up for some lack of speed from the 3-4 position. He's a good rim protector, which can help make up for some of the drives that are going to be given up on the perimeter. He's a pretty good finisher on the pick and roll. So we'll be giving more options for them offensively. Like, if you were to scan the sort of gaps in the Blazers sort of situation, Noel fills most of those holes.
Yeah, well, what Noel offers the Blazers is, recently, Terry Stotts is comfortable dropping bigs and, sort of playing like a drop back zone, like Gobert style defense. He was an assistant on the 2011 Mavs championship team. So like Tyson Chandler defense, right? And that's what he's comfortable with. But the roster he's been given and the nature of the elite teams right now in the NBA, he feels like he has to switch, right? The great thing about Nerlens Noel is, like, you can respond to pick and rolls however the hell you want. Like, he can drop back and protect the rim as well as just about anyone, and he'll get out and contest and do that, and it'll be good. You can also have him, like, play zone and almost do, like, a Kawhi Leonard type thing. Like, he averages, just as many steals as he averages blocks. Like,
yeah, I mean... His second year, like, he was close to having 2.5 steals, 2.5 blocks.
Right.
Which is, like, Olajuwon stuff.
Yeah, and like,
not that I'm actually comparing him to Olajuwon, which, like, the rarity of that stat is crazy.
He's a very good defensive player. And, he has very limited value right now. And I'm going to have a podcast coming out soon with Kevin Pelton, and we talk about this. Like, if Neil O'Shea is trying to, like, nickel and dime to get Nerlens Noel, who will call a full dollar, right? Somebody's going to offer, like, 20 cents, and he's not going to get him. He's not going to get Nerlens Noel. So, like, give up 30 cents if you have to. Like, go ahead, like, tack a top 10 protected first round pick to Alan Crabb. Like, attach Shabazz Napier. Like, fine, do it. Like, you have the worst defense in the last decade.
Right, and it's sort of like this thing where, like, the reason why Noel's viable as an option, right, is because everyone and their parents know the Sixers have to move one of those bigs.
Right. And they probably need to move two of them. Rashawn Holmes is good.
Yeah, totally. And that's probably going to be Nerlens, at least at first.
Right.
But that goes both ways, right? Like, that's both the positive and negative, right? Because they can negotiate from a high-leverage situation, the Blazers can, and be like, you have to move this guy. Like, we don't, you have to make this trade. It matters more to you than us. But so can every other team in the league.
Right, right. Well, and that's what I was trying to say, right? Is that, like, you can say, well, you have to accept 15 cents for a dollar, but that's not true. They can go to someone else and get 25 cents.
Right, like, they know they're going to be trading Noel at a discount, but, like,
yeah,
it doesn't have to be the discount the Blazers want.
So, like, make it, like, happen. Like, Neil O'Shea, I feel like the cost-benefit here, right, is you're treading in dangerous waters, I feel like, because what are you going to do if you don't get Nerlens Noel? Like, I don't know. It's bad.
Plumlee's not viable.
Plumlee is so bad. Plumlee is like the Austin Rivers of centers.
Plumlee is kind of fun to watch in this way, where, like, he'll bumble around the court, make bad decisions on both ends, and consistently counters will be like, but he's such a good passer. He gets four assists a game, he's such a good passer. And it's like,
dude, like, who wants Pat?
Well, it's twofold, right? It's like, A, he's such a good passer, he catches the pick and roll from Dame and kicks it out to CJ, or vice versa.
Right.
And then B, it's like, if the only thing your center does is generate four assists and be a good passer, he is bad at his job.
Right. Well, and I mean, you know, you have two creators at the guard positions. Your center should be DeAndre Jordan, Hassan Whiteside. Like, passing is not what they need to do. They need to finish. Like, you want Hassan. Like, it, and that's the thing, is like, if you're running a totally different system, like, say, the Nuggets, Jokic averaging 7-8 assists, that's dope. That's great. That's awesome. But, like, you know, you're built not around, like, you know, some weird, scrappy three-point shooting core like the Nuggets. They're built around CJ and Damian. Their center does not need to be a passer. There's enough passing already.
And Jokic is actually a good passer in a way that Plumlee is not.
Yeah. Plumlee's bad. He's a Plumlee.
Yeah. Margot Plumlee is tied with Merkel and whatever the other one's name is as my Mugal. Least favorite. Mugal. Who lives on a farm. Plumlee. They're all tied for my least favorite Plumlee. They're all just so frustrating to watch.
They're all the worst Plumlees.
Yeah.
They're tied for the worst Plumlee. And there's no best Plumlee.
No.
Okay, well, you know, there's always more to say about basketball logs. But, like...
Well, they can hear us in the next episode.
Yeah. No, that'll be fun. Well, so, thanks for listening to this episode of Unguarded Shooting. The audio quality is bad. It's all Lux's fault. I'm just kidding. My audio interface broke. It has nothing to do with him. I'm pretty upset about it. It's nice.
It's a great interface. We've used it for
when it works, ages. It's nice.
Sorry, buddy. But yeah, the audio quality is bad, but the word quality is good. And that's what you came here for.
Is it that good?
I mean, I don't know. I've been awake for so long, and I'm so tired.
I've been up for a long time. I'm going to play that song.
I learned today that if you're awake for 24 hours straight, it's the same as having a blood alcohol content of 0.1, which is well above the legal limit.
That's turns.
Yeah, it's like, if you're awake for 24 hours straight, your brain operates as though you're dumb drunk.
Huh. I don't sleep very much, so.
You should sleep more.
I don't think I'm... Well, maybe that makes sense.
I also learned, here's a fun fact, that the vast majority of people who don't sleep enough suffer from impaired judgment, sure, in such a way that they convince themselves that they can function totally fine on less sleep because their perception of what functioning totally fine is impaired because of the lack of sleep. See, that's like a feedback loop.
Oh my god.
It's very Inception.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to Almighty Ballin. Follow at Almighty Ballin? Ballin?
It's your Twitter.
I'm sorry, I'm impaired as if I have a blood alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. See, get some damn sleep.
Yeah, we're gonna go get some sleep. You know, this has been Michael Luxenberg and Chris Axman.
I'm at ML Surfboard.
For now. No, he's at ML Surfboard.
I mean, who knows when things might change.
Yeah, so check out almightyballer.com, blogtalkradio.com/ABPN. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I guess we enjoyed recording it. It was kind of a shit show. Or a crap show.
I had fun. It was definitely very fun.
I wish I
was a little less sleepy.
Yeah, no, same. Well, yeah, so, you know, leave us a 5-star review.
Get at us on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. You know, keep an eye out for a bunch of good episodes I've already recorded and just pretty much have to, you know, get up.
Thanks.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.